Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. We're going to talk about some of the misconceptions in Christianity, and we're going to talk about those keys. Those keys. Who's got the keys? Well, the keys to the Kingdom of Heaven is what you bind on earth is bound in heaven, and what you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. Which is why we were told to make no covenants with them, nor with their gods, their ruling judges. Where we were told to not bear false witness, not to take the name of the Lord God in vain. That would be like saying, I believe in Jesus, but I'm not going to do what he actually said. I believe in God, but I'm going to do contrary to what he said was important. I'm not going to do his will. I'm just going to believe in him, and then he has to save me because I believe in him. It's the kind of silly stuff that we have that is seducing silly people into thinking that they're Christians, and they're actually not. And that's why you're getting the results, the fruit that you're getting in your societies today all over the world, is because you become covetous societies. Now, things are going along real good for some people. Other people are down in the trash bins and the toilets and having a rough time of it. And of course, then there's always the rich people who think that they're successful. Somebody was saying the other day, somebody from China, communist from China, was saying that they thought of Bill Gates and Steve Jobs as successful people. She said, yeah, but you want to be successful like them. Well, Jobs is dead, but he made lots of money, and he was very big achiever in his own right. And Bill Gates certainly has made lots of money. But are they successful people? They're rich. But how do you measure success? It's interesting for a communist to be measuring a person by the amount of wealth. Of course, the interesting thing is this person's a communist and lives in China, but she's part of the elite communists living in China. You know, she doesn't even know how to ride a bike. She doesn't ride a bike. She's taken wherever she wants to go. She's wealthy. She's spoiled. She's rich. But so much for the classless society of communism. It doesn't really exist except in the minds of an imagination of philosophers. The reality is China isn't any different than it was under warlords and peasants. They still have their peasants, and they still have their warlords, and they have everybody in between that keeps the peasants in line. They just call it communism. But the same spirit is there, so the same results is there. And so this is why I say that it doesn't do me any good to tell you about the mechanics of the kingdom, how that works, unless the spirit of the kingdom is in your heart, written in your heart and written in your mind by the Father. And this is a quantum writing. This is a spiritual, mystical writing that takes place in your heart and your mind. It actually changes the way you think. Now, once it changes the way you think, when you start reading facts and information, you will come to different conclusions. When I studied the Bible originally, I was studying under a lot of people who had studied the Bible, knew Greek, knew languages, but many of them were coming to a different conclusion than I was. It took me a while before I figured out that they were coming to a different conclusion than I was, because when they would say the same words, I thought they saw the same things. They meant the same things. They were thinking the same things. I mean, it sounded good. You know, love. You know, I've talked about this so many times. Love. My cat loves birds. She just loves birds. But when I use love there, it doesn't mean the same thing as my wife loves her children. It means something different. So, you can say the words, but it's the meaning that makes the difference. It's what's behind. You know, and you don't always see that. And so defining words is really important. And you see that all the time in our writings, where we point out that there's, you know, five different words that are translated into the single English word world. So sometimes when they talk about the end of the world, they're not talking about the end of the planet. They're talking about the end of an age. When they're saying my kingdom's not of this world, they're not talking about my kingdom's not on this planet. They mean my kingdom's not a part of this organized system, this constitutional order, this government of Pontius Pilate. And if you don't know that those are the words that they're using and those are the meanings of those words, then you can be led astray. But of course, if you want to be led astray, if you prefer to go astray, there's plenty of information out there. And the book Zealot by Aslan is one of those books that will help lead you astray. And if you're already astray, it will help reconfirm that you're in the right place. Astray. Separate. Away from. Out of the way of the Lord. And what is the way of the Lord? The way of the Lord is that you need to love your neighbor as yourself. You need to love his rights, his wife, his children, his possessions, and his right to hold those possessions as much as you want to hold your own. So you wouldn't ever think about taking something away from your neighbor that he earned or produced so that you could have something. You just wouldn't think about it. You just wouldn't want to go there. You say, well, that's his. He made that. He produced that. He doesn't have to give it to me. I don't want his stuff. I mean, if he wants to help me out, great, but I don't want to take anything away from him because I don't covet his goods. You see, that's written in your heart. It's just by nature. You don't want to take from your neighbor. But those of you who like the idea of taking from your neighbor, who would rather have than at your neighbor's expense than to go without, you're going to think, well, let's do this. Let's have a social welfare system where the rulers of our government force my neighbor to pay for my child's education. Then I could have a really good education because we can force all the people without children to build the school. I mean, we have to pay in too, but we could build so much better of school if we force all those childless people to pay in, corporations to pay in, and everybody to pay in. Because we have a right to school. Heck with their rights to what they produce themselves. We don't need to worry about their rights. We want our school. We want our health care. We want our fire department. We want to be socially secure. So we can take from our neighbor, and we think that's okay, and you think that's okay already. If I tell you, come along and say, no, that's not okay, that's called coveting thy neighbor's goods, and that will lead you into bondage. You're going to say, well, you're crazy. I don't want anything to do with you. You're telling me I can't have my social welfare and my free education and my health care. Somebody ought to crucify you. And of course, that's what they did to Christ. Because he was saying, no, this system of Corban by forced offerings makes the word of God to none effect. It's not loving your neighbor. And it doesn't bear fruit. It weakens the poor and leads to corruption of the ruling class. You have to have a ruling class if you're going to have communism. If you're going to have socialism, you got to have a ruling class. Somebody's got to decide how much to take from your neighbor and how much to give out to you. And those are the people with power. And those ruling classes, guess what? They're going to have children who don't know how to ride a bicycle because they got a chauffeur that drives them everywhere they want to go. They don't have to work. Oh, they send them to school and they learn, but they're not really achievers. They're because they don't have to. Because they got all you people out there working for them. And of course, this is the way it always works in the society. But something peculiar happened in America. Things were so hard here, and there was different kinds of spirits here already, but things were so hard here that if you didn't work together, you died. And so it didn't make people work together, but it killed off those who didn't want to work together. It made them unsuccessful. You know, that there wasn't anybody having 20 children on welfare because there was no welfare. If you were the undeserving poor, you were going to stay poor. People might help you and make sure you didn't starve to death, and they might even help your children out. But they look for people who were willing to work. Because they knew that if you don't work, you don't eat. But, you know, when Americans first started coming here, this socialism idea had already begun in Europe. It was already had its root holes in the tyrants in Kings. They used it to placate the masses and the mob. And of course, that's the way they operate. That's the way they do things. That's the way they establish things in the world, is that they get you to give up rights, to sell your rights, to give up those liberties that God has bestowed you with. Liberty is the right to choose so that you can have benefits. And of course, God hates that. He's always hated that. Esau, he hated. What did Esau do? He sold his birthright for a pot of porridge. A pot of pottage. He sold his birthright for that. Esau, do I hate? Nicolaitans, he hates the Nicolaitans. What are they? Nicolaitan, conquered people. Conquered by what? Because of covetousness, they had been made merchandise. They had been conquered because the greatest destroyers of freedom are the givers of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. Who else does he hate? The heir of Balaam. And what is Balaam? Ba, conquer, Lam, people. Conquered people. This is what conquers you. The keys to the kingdom of heaven is that you do not sell your birthright for benefits. You do not give other people the power to take away from your neighbors so that you can be well off. Simple as that. You know, I keep going back to that, but that's the essence of the gospel of the kingdom. Until John the Baptist, people thought that was the way you took care of the needy, was by forcing the contributions of the people. Now, it wasn't always that way, but it was that way in Rome. They had a system of Corbin that had moved from the system of charity they once had to this system. The Teutons, they still had the system of charity through their ministers, that they would give up stuff to help take care of the needy of their society. But they prized honor, they prized diligence, they prized courage, and they rewarded that individually through their charity. And if you were slothful and immoral and decadent, they would let the stones of their altar know, hey, don't give to that. Don't support that wickedness. He's not working at it. He's not trying. He shouldn't eat. And you'd be surprised how many people straighten up. And how many people become slothful when you say, oh, you get money, even if you don't try. If you just fill out the forms, you get the money. And my son asked me many, many years, decades and decades ago, when he was a small boy, he said, what was taxes? And I said, well, if you work real hard and you make a lot of money, the government will tax you. They'll take a portion of what you make and to support the government. And he says, well, what's welfare? I says, if you don't work, and you don't try real hard, and you fall on hard times, the government will give you money. And I didn't try to make it sound other than the way it was. But he was just a little kid, and he says, that's not right. But because that's what you want, the free education and all that, that's, you've justified that in your own mind. I mean, how many people say welfare is corrupt and abusive and creating this whole underbelly non-working class that is making places like Detroit and other cities and parts of cities uninhabitable? Not that they begrudge the poor, but there is corruption in the system, and it's hard to weed out because you have a bureaucracy trying to fix a bureaucracy. So they see that, but then they don't want to give up their public schools. They don't want to give up their Social Security. All those are the same thing. It's just, you know, it's just a question of degrees. It's not a question of right. It's all wrong to force your neighbor to contribute to the world. But it should be that way for the slothful. For people who won't take care of each other by faith, hope, and charity, they should go under tribute. And that's what the Bible tells us. The slothful should be under tribute. So we come to this idea, and we talked about it in the last show, this Aslan's Book of the Zealot, and the idea that he talks about Jesus being xenophobic, hating foreigners. The only thing that God hates is what is foreign to him, and forcing people to contribute to the welfare of others is foreign to God. So yeah, in that sense, he's xenophobic. He hates the Nicolaitans, because the Nicolaitans are foreign to him. The idea of selling your birthright for benefits is foreign to him. But that's not what Aslan had in mind. He's thinking something else entirely different. He's imagined something entirely different because he doesn't really want to see the righteousness of a society that's based on faith, hope, and charity. You know, that's what worship is. Worshipping had to do with following the ways of a particular God. And the ways of the God is faith, hope, and charity, and loving your neighbor as yourself. So if you're not doing that, it doesn't matter what you're singing in church. You're not worshiping God. I mean, that's what he was saying. If you take Moses all the way back to in Egypt, when they had a socialist society where you had to pay in 20% and they took care of your social welfare needs. And that was bondage. Because what should have been for your welfare was a snare, and they were bound by that. And they became possessions. They became human resources. They became merchandise, which is what Peter's talking about. The covetousness, they were made merchandise. They coveted their brother's position, sold him into bondage, and they themselves went into bondage. And the same with you. That's why you're in bondage today. So if you want out of bondage, you must set your brother free. You must say, you don't owe me anything. And it's not instantaneous now. Because you have to learn how to not be a foolish virgin. You have to learn how to take care of one another. And you don't know how to do that as a society. You need insurance and social welfare and unemployment and health care and social security and welfare. All these things. You need all those things to survive as a society. Because you're crippled. You're weakened. In a time of affluence, they were not strengthening the poor, they were weakening the poor. Now, poor and rich need to come together and see that this is the only salvation for society, as well as the only salvation for you. That's just the way it is. In Matthew 26:63, it says, "But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee, by the living God, that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God." Be the Christ, the Son of God. He doesn't deny that there's a Christ and that there's a Son of God. He just wants to know if Jesus is him. And that's the conflict. Was Jesus him? And the Son of God, if thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross, they say later. And they wonder, he trusted in God, let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. But, you know, isn't that where we started with the tempter? You know, prove that you're the Son of God. But what is the Son of God? What was this all about, this Son of God thing? And we can go on, and declared to be the Son of God with power according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead. That's Romans 1:4. And you can read in Acts 9:20. And straight away he preached Christ in the synagogues that he is the Son of God. The Son of God. What is this all about? We can see it in Hebrews and in Revelations and all these places. But if you go back to Genesis 6:2, it says that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, and they were fair, and they took them wives, of all of which they chose. And it goes on, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men. And so that these same words are there. But when we read in Job 2:1, again, there was a day when the Son of God came to present themselves before the sons of God, present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. You see, there's this reference to sons of God, so it's not a new phrase. And we see it in Romans 8:14, for as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. So you could be a son of God too. You just won't be the son of God. Does that make sense to you? It says, if we go into John 1:12, but as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. He gave them that power. So they're sons of God. Beloved, now, are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. So what are they talking about? If you go back to Matthew 5:9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Or Luke 20:36, neither can they lie any more, for they are equal unto the angels and are the children of God, being the children of the resurrection. We're all sons of God. We're all children of God. It was common in those days to refer to men as the sons of God. We see this over and over and over again in the Testament. They're just not the Son of God. The Son of God is Christ. He even says that he wants you to be his brother. In Christ, we are brothers, sons of God, children of God. Like in 1 John 3:10, in this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil, whosoever doeth not righteousness, whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth nor his brother. So these people who say, oh, you can't lose your salvation, once you accept Jesus, you're saved. So they're saying, yeah, you can do unrighteousness and still be saved, but not according to 1 John 3:10. He says, whoever doeth not righteousness is not of God. So the fact is, you told me you were saved, but you do not bear the fruits of repentance. I'm going to have to believe, sorry, Charlie, I don't think you're saved. And I think it's important that I tell you that. You know, as far as being the sons of God, did you know that it's also written that ye are gods? Now, you have to be careful with this, because you can start getting vain, blow up head, and think you're gods and you rule and all this stuff. We are made in the image of God. And in Psalms 82:6, it says, I have said, ye are gods, and all of you are children of the Most High, children of the Most High, children of God, sons of God, daughters of God. Isaiah 41:23, show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together. John 34, Jesus answered them, Is it not written in your law, I said ye are gods? Gods, the word God simply means ruling judges, and you are ruling judges. But Jesus was the ruling judge of us all. Why? Because he forgave, because he gave, because he would not exercise authority one over the other, because he was going to allow you to make choices, but you're going to suffer the consequences of those choices. And this we need to understand, that God brought us liberty so that we could make the right choice. If we make the wrong choice, we will suffer recompense. They made the wrong choice when they elected Saul, but they had already made the wrong choice long before that when they decided to disobey God and to do contrary to his wishes. Nowadays, because you can be saved with a thought, you can disobey God all you want, you're still saved, according to some. It's garbage. It's a lie. It's a deception. It's a strong delusion. And it's going to kill millions of people because it's a false witness of what Christ said. It's a false witness of what Paul said. But that doesn't seem to bother them. Now, we'll talk more about this Reza Aslan and what he actually says about Jesus in an article that was written by CNN author Prethero, Stephen Prethero. And we'll see what he has to say about this. And, you know, this whole interview about, you know, why does a Muslim writing a book about Jesus Christ, writing this book, Zealot? Well, he used to be a Christian. He is a religious study. But now he became very angry at Christianity and Christ and the whole thing. And that led him to being a Muslim. And, of course, we know that anger clouds the mind and draws you into a dark side. Not that Muslims are a dark side. Because Muslims are just as deceived about Abraham and Moses as Jews are deceived about Abraham and Moses, as Christians are deceived about Abraham and Moses, because Abraham and Moses and John the Baptist and Jesus Christ were all in agreement. They were in agreement. But all these religionists, they've gone this way and gone that way and taken off in these different directions. And often because of men like Aslan, whose interview goes viral, and they invent a whole new idea about Jesus and the biography of Jesus as a revolutionary, even equating him with some of the most bloodthirsty revolutionaries in the world. And it's just not true. And it's a distraction. But hopefully, those of you who are listening to the show will start to see that there is a right way. And you can start on it any time. It's just about repenting and turning around. And we'll talk about that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Now, in this article on CNN, he says there are 7 of these different items, arguments, in the Zealot. He breaks them down in 7. Some people break them down in 5. But his is that Jesus was this violent revolutionary, which is like, did you even read the book? But, of course, he discounts the book as made up because of the fact that Jesus was this violent revolutionary and things didn't work out because of the fall of Jerusalem, and so, therefore, they had to reinvent Christ by writing the Bible and putting him into this other light. But, I mean, they really had to rewrite it because every time you turn around, he's talking about forgiving and turning the other cheek. And, I mean, it's just everywhere. Blessed are the peacemakers. And, I mean, this is why he's getting into trouble with the Pharisees, is because he's so darn forgiving. But Aslan says, no, he wasn't forgiving. He was this almost bloodthirsty, xenophobic, violent revolutionary. And he says, many scholars have argued that Jesus was a political figure, and I agree with that. He was a political figure. He's talking about government all the time. The whole Bible is about government. I mean, Cain started a city-state, Nimrod, Pharaoh. It's all conflict of men and morality and government. And there are good governments and there are bad governments, and but you get to bad governments because you're bad people. You reject God and it leads you towards bad governments. When you accept God and you repent and start turning around and living your life according to the ways of Christ and the ways of Moses and the ways of Abraham, then it starts leading you back to good government. I'm not interested in changing the government. I'm interested in you changing. Your heart's changing. If that happens, if we can do that, everything else is a no-brainer. I have no interest in votes or political aspirations or whatever. Just not interested. I'm interested in you changing, you turning around, you repenting, you becoming a moral individual who seeks the kingdom of God and his righteousness. I'm not interested in getting you out of the system or any of that stuff. I'm interested in you seeing the system for what it is and rejecting the ways of the system that are not cast up, that lead you into corruption, that lead your society into decay. I'm interested in that, turning around and going the way of righteousness. And if you're wanting to do that, then let's talk. If you want to go do something else, it's a free country, right? So Jesus as a revolutionary in this book just doesn't fit. He talks about, quote, blood-spattered God of Abraham, Moses, and Jacob, and Joshua. And of course, we've written a book, That Kingdom Come, and they're not nearly as blood-splattered as you think. Violence and war gets the press. And of course, our view of the Torah and the Old Testament is based on the Pharisaical interpretation. And we know at the time of Christ that the Essenes had a completely different interpretation of the exact same Torah, reading it in the exact same Hebrew, and even the Septuagint. They came to a completely different conclusion about many, many, many things than the Pharisees did. And we know that the Pharisees and Christ didn't get along, and we know that Jesus Christ and the Essenes had very similar ideas in many areas. To say that Jesus was an Essene is not really fair, because Essenes didn't even call themselves Essenes. They're not even sure where the word come from. Some say it means healer and different things, but the point is there was this movement steeped in the ritual of baptism and washing up that believed in faith, hope, and charity, believed in a humble life of service one to another. It believed in knock and the door shall be opened to you. It believed in charity. And that's what Christ was preaching. But for some reason, Aslan thinks he's a zealot who, like the Sicarii zealots, are going around stabbing people. And that's just not the case. Were the Essenes armed? Often they were. And they actually even practiced military tactics. Some of them. Because of the fact that they knew that, you know, you had to be there to defend the weak against thieves and robbers. And so anyway, the idea that he was a revolutionary, God's sovereignty could not be established except through force. Absolutely diametrically opposed to John the Baptist, who Aslan says was a more prominent figure than even Jesus Christ. And we clearly see John the Baptist saying Jesus Christ was better than him. And John the Baptist, until John the Baptist, see, he misses this entirely. And it's probably because he was raised in modern Christendom who misses it entirely too. You know, till John the Baptist, people were establishing the kingdom of God by force, but John the Baptist was not. He was doing it through faith, hope, and charity. Simple that. Jesus did the same thing. So he knew that God's sovereignty could only be established through faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty, something that Paul agrees with, something Jesus, John the Baptist, and really, even Moses. Love thy neighbor. Don't oppress the stranger in your midst. These are rules coming out of Moses. Yeah, if you're attacked, if somebody wants to destroy you, defend yourself. But this is, they didn't conquer Canaan. They came in with a superior system and were accepted with open arms, and the archaeological record bears me out. Were there battles? Absolutely. But most of the settling of Canaan was done peacefully through a superior system of self-government. Jesus' kingdom was worldly. I agree. It was at hand. It was for the living. It was not for the dead. It was a kingdom where you repented. My kingdom is not of the world. We explained that. We have an article on that. We have chapters in the books on that. It meant it was not of the world of Pontius Pilate. He had no treaty with Pontius Pilate. He had no agreements with Pontius Pilate. If you understand the history of Judea, you'd know what I mean. So Jesus is revolted against the Romans and Jewish authorities. Well, I don't know how you figure he revolted. Was he leading an army? When the guards came, did he say, "Take them, Peter"? No, it's not what he did. Now you have to just erase the Bible in order to come up with these kinds of conclusions. Now, how was Rome there? Let's look at that. How was Rome there in Judea? Did it come in and conquer Judea? Had Judea been conquered? Did they march in and say that all you people are subject to us and now have to pay us taxes, etc., etc.? No, it's not how it happened. There was a civil war. Well, first, let's go all the way back to, there were no kings in Judea. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. And as long as most of the people were good in their hearts and the law was written on their hearts and their minds, this worked out pretty good. But when they rejected the ways and principles and precepts of God, then it started getting more and more chaotic. And this is what was happening. And they had rejected the ways of God for many, many years. Some. Many. But some were still following the ways of God. And they said, we got this corruption in our courts. These judges are taking bribes and people are getting away with murder. And we have to do something about it. Let's elect a king. And that was provisions for electing a king. And he would have five items in your constitution that were mentioned back in Deuteronomy 17. Most people don't understand those. We talk about them in the book Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions. But there were these five elements that you were to write down and to read to that king every day. And he was not to do any of these things. And you were to follow those five items. And, of course, they stray. But Samuel told the people what would happen when they got this king. Because God said, tell him. He's going to take and 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 take. And he's going to take your sons. He's going to put them in harm's way. He's going to take your daughters and make them serve him. And all this is going to go on, and then you're going to cry out and complain, and I'm not even going to hear you, because I told you so. That's basically what he says. You can read it in Samuel 8. So, all that's happened today in the world today, because we've gone whoring after these other gods, these rulers who could exercise authority in order to obtain benefits at our neighbor's expense, and so we have gone that way, and they take, 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 because we're not really doing what Jesus said. The early church started to do what Jesus said. And they said there is another king when Jesus, and they took care of their own welfare, and they wrote letters to the emperor. We have copies of all those, and we refer to them in our articles on baptism and what have you. So you can see that this was another way to live. It's another form of government. It doesn't overthrow the existing government, because we need that existing government. That's there to punish the wicked. Who are the wicked? The slothful in charity and faith and hope. Those are the wicked, the ones who want these rulers to exercise authority. And they should rule and exercise authority. But those of you who will remain faithful or return to that faith will eventually be moved towards liberty. It's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be instant. But you're not ready for liberty under God. You don't know how to live at liberty under God. You don't have the connections. You're not caring for anybody else but yourself. You just want to get free. And that's ridiculous. So anyway, yes, Jesus was a revolutionary. But he, like John the Baptist, was saying, we need to take care of one another through faith, hope, and charity. Azan also writes, there can be no doubt that Jesus' main antagonist in the gospel is neither the distant emperor in Rome, nor his heathen officials in Judea. It is the high priest, Caiaphas, who will become the main instigator of the plot to execute Jesus precisely because of the threat he posed to the temple's authority. Well, yes and no. For one thing, Caiaphas was not the instigator. Ananias was. Or Annas, as they is referred to in some places. And he actually put Caiaphas in power. And they just recently excavated what they believe is Caiaphas's bone box. And there are symbols on it that seem to be associated with early church Christianity. And there are three spikes in his bone box that are the kind of spikes that would be used during crucifixion. Are they Jesus' spikes, or was Caiaphas later crucified himself? Difficult to say. The jury is still out on that. But there is reason to believe from the Gospels that Caiaphas later repented his choice. He was a pawn, a political pawn, used to bring Jesus down because Jesus was affecting the purse strings of the temple. The same thing they were accused of in Ephesus. They were accused of robbing the temple at Ephesus. Once you understand that these temples had a treasury, a system, they had a gastophon, and then which was the royal treasury, but they also had another thing they called treasury, which is Corban, which is where the social welfare money goes. And that Corban was in the temple. That's where the money went, because this is a government building handling the social welfare of the people. It's just that since Herod, it was now compulsory for all those people who signed up. And not everybody signed up, which is why the tax man comes to the apostles and say, does your master pay the tax? Is he's asking that question because everybody didn't pay the tax because everybody didn't sign up. If you go to some countries like in Santo Domingo, when you sign up for their Corban system, their social welfare system, you have to get an identity card. In Judea, when you signed up, you would get an identity stone, a little stone with a Hebrew name carved on it, and that represented your name in the books that the scribes kept. It says that you're a member, and therefore you were entitled to benefits. And Rome had the same thing, and it was through the Temple of Saturn, and Ephesus had the same thing, although Ephesus was dealing with an underwriter for whole countries, which were there were 127 countries that built Ephesus and were a part of that social welfare underwriting system in this World Bank that they had. But anyway, the system where you signed up and you got a card or a stone that identified you, you would be cared for in the case of catastrophic events and or old age or what have you. And as I said before, with the blind man and his parents, if you declared that Jesus Christ was your king, that he was the highest son of David, you were going to be cut off. They were going to scratch a line to your name in the registry, and you weren't going to get any more benefits. And when they questioned the parents of the blind man, they said they knew of this, they mentioned it, and so they say he's old enough to speak for himself because they didn't want to lose their social security. This was the dividing line in Christendom, right here. And so anyway, Caiaphas was a trustee of that system as high priest. But Jesus says to Caiaphas, you shall see me coming on a cloud. You. He says it specifically to Caiaphas. You shall see me. And coming in power and glory. And of course there's references in historians like Josephus that men were seen marching in the clouds and Titus pulled back his troops. And so Caiaphas may have seen that. Now I'm not saying that was the second coming. I'm saying that that's the reports. There is no mention of a second coming in the Bible. There's a mention of a returning. One, he mentions it to Caiaphas, you will see me coming upon the clouds. But it doesn't mean that he can't come that way again and again and again and again and again. It's just not that specific. And these prophecies have a tendency to repeat themselves. It happens here and then it happens again in a bigger way. So it may happen again in a bigger way. But anyway, the point is, his accusation that his major antagonist was not Rome, and it certainly wasn't, Pontius Pilate is seen defending Jesus, saying Jesus is the rightful king. He even writes an official document in three languages on ebony wood and nails it to the cross. This is the king of the Jews, and it's not a mockery. It's actually an official document, and they want it taken down because they don't want anybody thinking that this is the king of the Jews because it's going to affect revenue. And the fact is it did affect revenue because on Pentecost, thousands of people got the baptism, were cast out of that. They opted out of the Corban of Herod and the Pharisees and opted into the Corban of Jesus Christ. Corban of Jesus Christ is, okay, this is how much you owe. How much can you pay? No, I can only pay this much, paid in full. We were already given instructions that that's how it works in the kingdom of God. And so nobody goes to jail for failure to pay. But if you don't pay, what is the policing operation? They gather together in tens, hundreds, and thousands. If you don't contribute, your friends know about it. They know you're selfish. And they're not going to encourage that selfishness. they're not going to feed that selfishness because you're not working at it. You're not loving one another. So don't expect, you know, you fall on hard times, you may get some bread, but don't expect butter. Okay? That's simple. When that's built into your system of social welfare, then you have social justice because you have social mercy and social choice. The social justice they talk about today under socialism is not social justice. It's going to lead to social injustice. You're going to weaken the poor. You're going to destroy the middle class. You're going to raise up tyrants. You're going to be too weak as a society to even defend your neighbor against unrighteousness. People will be raped in the streets. People will be robbed of trillions of dollars, and nobody will do anything about it because it's not my responsibility. That's just common sense. You want to study social studies? Is that not the way it happens in history? I mean, you have to be a total imbecile in history to think that it happens any other way. If you want to be a social studies PhD, you need to understand that systems based on force, which Jesus Christ did not preach, he was forgiving the debtor. He was turning the other cheek. He said that you have to forgive. You have to give. He talks about love and charity and love, charity and love and charity over and over again. He says there's no greater man than John the Baptist, and John the Baptist said you have to do it by charity, not by force. I don't know how many different ways you can say it. He does say that Palm Sunday is a key moment in Jesus' story. Every Jesus biographer has a key moment in the life of Jesus when his essence is revealed. For Aslan, that moment comes when Jesus mounts his donkey and rides into Jerusalem. In this celebration commemorated in the Christian world every year at Palm Sunday, Jesus is not demonstrating his humility. Instead, he is announcing his kingship. Absolutely true. That's what the palms were. This is what happened with Hyrcanus. And I never finished that story. There was a rebellion, two kings in Jerusalem, hundreds of years before. They were in a civil war, fighting over who was the rightful king. Aristobulus, Hyrcanus. Hyrcanus, Aristobulus. Battling it out. Aristobulus writes Pompey, who's down there in the Gulf of Sidra, beating up pirates. You know, just like Ronald Reagan, Thomas Jefferson, everybody does that. It's kind of a prerequisite to history. History does repeat itself. There are pirates in the Gulf of Sidra. So anyway, Pompey's down there beating up the pirates, and he gets this letter from Aristobulus saying, "Will you help me? Somebody is usurping my kingdom, and here's a bunch of gold leaf that he sent him. Can you come and help me?" And he sends a general right away, and his general shows up, battle over, and Aristobulus is on the throne. And they're bringing law and order, and they're following certain rules in the Torah, because they're aware of the Torah, and they've been aware of the Torah for hundreds of years. That if you studied law in Rome, you probably studied the Torah. So anyway, he starts implementing certain rules to maintain order. Aristobulus complains. Sends another letter to Pompey saying your general is usurping his position here. And Pompey comes himself. Says, "Where's your law books?" Open the Torah. He's listening to the case. Based on Torah, based on the law of Judea, who is the rightful king? Suddenly, he realizes that Aristobulus is not the rightful king. And he says, "I have to withdraw my support from Aristobulus." And he does. "But I have already received gold in appreciation of me coming here and guaranteeing his kingship. I can't keep that. That would be dishonest of me." He gives it away to the poor. Through what? The temples. Why? Does he give it away to the poor through the temples? Because that's what the job of the temples are. Take care of the poor and the needy of society. He gives it away. Huge gift. Because they weren't quite socialists yet in Rome. The temples were supported mostly by free will offerings, even at that time. He offers his support to Hyrcanus, and Hyrcanus will not make an agreement with him. Why? Because in the Torah, it says that their king can't be making treaties with foreign nations. It's not a matter of hating them, just can't make agreements with them. But the Pharisees come to Pompey and say, "Aristobulus is hiding in the temple. Will you get him out?" He knows his men can't go in the temple unless they go to the laver, so he has his men all wash up at the laver, go in, instructs them not to touch any sacred things, and they get Aristobulus out of the temple. While they're there, since mostly what the legions do is build things, they build harbors, they build roads, they build trading centers, they build cities where there were none, and people love them. Business is great. Business is booming. Of course, there's always going to be somebody who hates them, but this is how they got there. They had not conquered Judea. They were there, invited in to settle civil disputes, civil war, not civil, cases, but civil war disputes. They were to decide who was the rightful king. That's why they were invited there. Now, they were on shaky ground because they were invited by a guy who wasn't really the king, but, they're good for business. So they let him stay, and they weren't going to be pushing him out anyway. Things weren't run that way back then. So they had a very strong presence there. And lo and behold, they decided who was going to be king. Jesus. Jesus Christ is king of Judea. Jesus Christ is king of Judea. Jesus Christ is king of Judea. This is his decision. And just so happens he happened to be procurator of Rome at that time because Tiberius was extremely ill, had retreated to his island, and had turned matters over to other people, including Pontius Pilate, who was married to his favorite granddaughter, who became a Christian, along with Pontius Pilate, and there are churches built after them. They are considered saints by a large number of Christian communities because of their philanthropic taking care of the needy of society through faith, hope, and charity. That's right, Pontius Pilate, defender of Jesus Christ, who did not understand what he was getting into when he thought for sure that the Pharisees would have wanted to see Jesus Barabbas executed, because Jesus Barabbas was a zealot and wanted to violently destroy the corrupt Sanhedrin and high priest society of Judea, not Jesus Christ, who simply fired the money changers and wanted people to go back to faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. And maybe we'll talk more in the next show about why the soldiers didn't like Jesus, but there's a couple other things. The early church turned Jesus into a pacifist preaching a spiritual kingdom. Well, they did turn it into a spiritual kingdom, but that wasn't until much, much later. It was a kingdom. This is the ones who say there is another king when Jesus, who do contrary to the decrees of Caesar, and this is, of course, why they were getting into trouble. But these people were actually separated, living in the world, but not of the world, not taking the benefits of the world, taking care of one another. And they had every right to do that. They even had their own ID, which is mentioned in the Justinian Codes, which if you were a real scholar, Mr. Aslan, you would know all this. And you should read my books, which you can read for free, because I'm not in the book-selling business. I'm controversial, but I'm not in the book-selling business. I will sell you a book if you want to buy it, but you can download all our books for free. So, but we're telling you like it really is, and of course there were two other ideas. The idea that Jesus was God also originated in the early church. No, it didn't, and we already went through that over and over again. That you are all sons of God. You are all children of God. It's just that Jesus is the Son of God. And there's more to that, but that'll be good enough for now. And the last thing is the Bible isn't to be believed as history, which we've already talked about in previous shows, looking at Luke. It is pretty accurate, pretty darn accurate, if you get the right translations in there. But anyway, we'll have to talk more about this when we return to Keys of the Kingdom next time. And until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.